The Touching the Trail Podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Touching the Trail Podcast, our weekly ritual of peace, presence, and perseverance. This week's episode is episode 172. And before I jump into what I'm going to be talking about today, I just want to take care of a little business. Now, there are two ways that you can support Touching the Trail. The first is that you can go to touchingthetrail.com/donate to donate to the show. And the second way is that you can go to targetreleaserecovery.com to pick up your very own Basecamp and Peak. Now, these are functional, affordable, unique, and handmade handheld deep tissue massage tools. And both those links are in the show notes. Now, jump into it. I have spent the past two weekends camping. Now, just this past weekend, I went to the Sea Otter Classic in Monterey, and the weekend before that, I was in Pinnacles National Park. Now, when I was in Pinnacles, which I didn't really talk about last week because I wanted to jump right into the interview with Robert Thurman, but while I was in Pinnacles, I did quite a bit of running. It was the first kind of two big runs that I went on since the Santa Barbara Nine Trails race a few weeks ago. And I just spent a couple days running amongst the beautiful rock formations out there and the soaring condors. Now, if you don't know what Pinnacles National Park is, it's located about 2 hours north of me here in San Luis Obispo in California. And it is a national park that kind of preserves the one of the natural habitats of condors, which were an extremely, extremely endangered, on the verge of extinction species many years ago, and they have been systematically, through care and dedication from people who are taking care of these birds, been brought back to a healthy population, more or less. And so Pinnacles was made partially and mainly really because of the condor population. But it also has some incredible running and some incredible rock formations out there that you can adventure all around and in and on. I camped with a couple of friends of mine from the Born to Run Ultras crew, I guess you can say, and we just kind of traversed the park in various ways. There was a one, I won't, you know, give you a play by play of what we did or anything like that. It's more of just a recommendation to those listening today that if you ever make your way out to Central California or anything like that, I would definitely put Pinnacles on your list if you haven't been there already. It is a wonderful park to adventure in. There is a trail at the top of one of the kind of the main rock formations, kind of the central area of the park. The trail is called the Steep and Narrow Trail, and it is one of the most incredible trails I've ever ran. Instead of being made on dirt, I guess the heat trail builders kind of just ran out of dirt to build a trail on, because now it just that section kind of just turns into a bunch of massive boulders and rock formations. Their solution to that problem, but still, you know, they still wanted to build a trail over the area, was to cut steps directly into the rock faces and install railings along those steps, just on one side. And so you kind of traverse for about a mile or so, I would say, just up almost like these vertical rock faces and then down these vertical rock faces across the tops of these rock formations. And you get not only a wonderful view of the park itself, but also a wonderful, like, I guess you can say, intimate experience with the rocks and the area that you're kind of climbing in and within, because you're right there amongst them and in them and under them. You have to kind of like angle and twist your body away and under and around all of these rocks that you're moving through. And you feel immersed in this landscape. And if you're lucky enough, like we were, thankfully, you can see some condors. On Saturday, we saw some condors soaring around up above us, riding a thermal. And then on Sunday, when we were on the Steep and Narrow Trail, we actually saw two condors sitting on a couple of the formations. The first condor we saw, we were actually able to look at through a telescope that one of the condor trackers had. And so we stared at that guy for a while. I think he was number 68. And we kind of just watched him watch the land. He wasn't really doing much. And then as we were making our way along the steep and narrow trail, we came across another condor sitting on another rock formation. And he must have been, I don't know, riding the winds or something, kind of. He was sitting on the rock, and then he spread his wingspan all the way out. It's like an 8-foot wingspan or something. And kind of just floated on the wind that was coming across his wings, but didn't like lift off or start flapping his wings or fly away or anything. His feet were still on the rock. So, and he was super close too. So it was a pretty incredible to see, you know, a condor, their full wingspan and just their whole body and just everything about them so close, and him just doing his thing, just feeling the winds or whatever he was doing. I don't really know what he was doing exactly, but it was quite incredible to see. Both on Saturday and on Sunday, we went through the Bear Gulch Caves, which, again, if you get your way out to Pinnacles, definitely go in these. They're Talus Caves, and so Talus, you know, it's fallen rock, fallen boulders. You hear Talus Fields, sometimes you see that on maps, or you hear of them when talking about mountain areas. And so these Talus Caves, they were steep canyons, steep, narrow canyons that kind of run along this creek bed and one of the little canyons there in Pinnacles in Bear Gulch. And rocks and boulders and other debris fell on top of these canyons and kind of covered them up and filled them in a way, leaving a channel below at the very kind of bottom of the canyons. And so you get these caves that you really have to like squeeze your body through in some senses. They're not like slot canyons where you get like, you know, get super tight or anything like that. But it does get pitch black at times if you didn't bring a headlamp like we did not. And you do have to squeeze your body at times. You make your way down. We started at the top near the reservoir, which is kind of just a little lake up there in Pinnacles. And then we made our way down into the caves, and to kind of get down into the main area of the caves, you make your way through these, you know, big boulder above you, canyon around you, kind of tight, you know, but nothing too crazy. Then you turn a corner and you step down some rock steps that were cut into the rock. And then you kind of look ahead of you and there's a massive rock right in front of you, massive boulder, or just rock formation. There's another massive boulder to your right, another massive boulder to your left. And you don't really know where the trail goes. And then you kind of look down and there's some steps that kind of head down into this little hole, it almost looks like, between these three rocks, and then curve off to the left. And if you look closer, you can see that the rock to your left doesn't connect all the way with the rock face in front of you, and so you kind of have a little space to play with there. And so you have to kind of shimmy on over and then squeeze your body downwards and then crouch down and move into this this crevice. And then it kind of opens up and you hear the creek rushing through, and you see a little metal bridge in front of you that heads right over the creek. And you walk across that, and then it gets pitch black. I'm talking like can't even see your hand in front of your face for the next, I don't know, 100 feet, maybe more. And it's all heading downstairs, down rock stairs that have been cut into the rock with a railing, thankfully. And we didn't bring a headlamp, like I said. So our solution was to just grab on the handrails and feel very carefully each rock step as we made our way down. And it was pitch black. It was very slow going as we kind of crept our way down these steps until we got to the next metal bridge that crossed the little creek again and made our way back into the light. And because these are talus caves, sunlight does filter through the boulders that are above you. So you can, there's mostly light in most sections of the caves. You head along some more and you kind of, you know, meander your way through more open areas where a lot of light is streaming through and there's not many rocks or boulders above you, and down into some totally seemingly closed off areas that seem like a totally real, I guess you can say, cave that has been cut into the rock and isn't a talus cave. Eventually you make your way to an area where it's kind of like a switchbacking staircase cut into the rock that makes its way down probably the steepest part of the cave for quite a while. And with the moss on the walls and the water rushing down below you, and you can hear it rushing and trickling at different times, and just minimal light filtering in from above, and this that kind of the damp feeling of a creek right below you, and everything else combined. And I kind of am wary to say this, but it's true. It almost feels like Disneyland. It seems like a set or something that's been, you know, specifically designed, but it's natural. And it's incredible. It really was a great way to experience the park, and not anything that I really knew was at Pinnacles. These caves that make you feel like you're in a Wild West movie, hiding out or something. And you go through them for quite a while before you open back up into Bear Gulch and the wider canyon. And so, again, if you make your way out to Pinnacles ever, definitely do the steep and narrow trail, and definitely head to the Bear Gulch caves. We also saw, which was kind of near the visitor center, I guess you can say, we saw a late 1800s homestead that was almost fully intact. Their homestead, their barn, their garage, actually, they were this family that was their homestead, was the first family in the valley there in Bear Gulch to get a car, Model T, and just all the other kind of aspects of their life, their life here in, or there in Bear Gulch, California, and making it work for years and years and years in the late 19th century and the early 20th century. Incredibly, to me at least, it was incredible. There was exposed San Francisco Chronicle newspapers on the wall. They were from April 28th or April 29th of 1929. We couldn't really tell. But we were sure it was from 1929. We just don't know the exact day. We couldn't really read that. But from what I could see, there were stories on sports. There was a story about a lawsuit being settled. There were comics. There was ads for the Southern California Gas Company. There was ads for modeling French laundry, quote unquote. It was just really incredible to see, and really incredible to just walk around this area, you know, the barn and everything else, like I said, that a family made their entire life within. And that was everything they knew. It was beautiful to see. The weekend was extremely peaceful as well, just reading and sitting by the campfire, listening to music, and just enjoying the beauty of the park, as I said. I mean, again, if you can't tell from what I've been talking about, Pinnacles is definitely on the list of one of my favorite national parks, and I definitely recommend that you get out there someday and check it out if you haven't so already. This past weekend, I went to the Sea Otter Classic. Now, if you don't know what the Sea Otter Classic is, it's a four-day event that is regarded as the largest cycling festival in the world. It draws about 10,000 athletes and about 70,000 fans, according to the website, and it mountain biking and road cycling are represented. It's been around since 1991, and my mom and dad actually attended some of the early Sea Otters. So as I was talking to my dad on the phone throughout the weekend, it was kind of odd to tell him what the event was like, you know, some 20 years after he went, and kind of compare and contrast it to what the event was like when he was there. I went up to Sea Otter, which is in Monterey at the Laguna Seca recreation area, the Laguna Seca Raceway. I went up with Cal Poly Cycling and the Bike Builders Club, a part of both, so I kind of hung out with both. I camped on site with Cal Poly Cycling. I was able to camp in my car, thankfully, which not many people were able to do. The campsites are pretty crowded and they fill up real quick. I volunteered on Friday. I ran along with some other volunteers at Feed Zone, the aid station, for the pro cycling race, road race, and it was fun. It was really fun. We were just handing out bottles to the cyclists as they rode by, but just to see the power in those cyclists' legs, to see their skill on the bike, to see their tactics as they maneuver their way through the pack and amongst the pack. The women's leaders, these two women who stayed in the front of the race since like lap number one, they actually lapped the main pack of women. So it was a really fun race to watch so closely, as I was running the Feed Zone. And then on Saturday and the rest of the day on Friday, I just hung out at the race and just had fun with all the different people from school and new people that I met. The expo was insane. Tons of people and a lot of free stuff. There Yeti Cycles was giving out free coffee, like half bags of coffee, whole beans. So I'm excited to try some of that. It smells like a good roast. I got a fanny pack from Scratch Labs, which is a nutrition company. I got a bunch of stickers. I got some lube from WD-40, actually. So wet and dry lube. And then I actually won a Castelli Pro like Aero Racing Bib. And this is their new, like it's called the Free or something bib for 2019. And I looked it up online because I was curious, and it's worth about, not about, it's worth $200. So yeah, I got a $200 cycling bib, which is pretty sweet. And another dude I know who was part of Bike Builders, he won a like about a $10,000 bike, Ibis bike, I think it was Ibis, from Pink Bike, and they built it out for him, and he picked it up on Sunday, and yeah, like a $10,000 bike, and he won it for free. It's insane. And there's like every single company out there imaginable represented, cycling related and cycling adjacent. And just, it was a blast to just walk around. I went to the expo a bunch of times just to walk around with people that I knew, to hang out, see what's going on, enter some raffles and hopefully win some stuff like that bib from Castelli, and just see, you know, what was out there. I tried on Normatec boots, which I've never tried on before. It was an interesting experience to say the least. I can definitely see why athletes cherish them so much for recovery. My legs weren't really that sore, so I didn't really see a difference, but I could definitely tell that if my legs were sore, the compression that these Normatec boots would, that they give would definitely help. If you don't know what Normatec boots are, they're kind of like pressurized bags that you put around your legs, and they're like leg-sized compression sleeves. They use air pressure to squeeze your legs and your muscles from the feet upwards and get the blood flowing. And we were able to demo the full cycle, like 15-minute cycle of these boots, the recovery cycle. And unfortunately, I mean, for me, where I'm at right now, they're like prohibitively expensive, so I wouldn't buy them right now. But they are definitely an interesting product, and they were fun to try out. Companies were giving out free coffee, free espresso. Me and a friend of mine got some, we got like an almond milk latte for free from Mavic. Just a really wild area to hang out in. I mean, the expo was crazy. I heard some other stories of like Cliff, they had like a party. I wasn't able to go to that. I just didn't go. I didn't know what was happening. I mean, all the booths, all the different companies were giving out stuff, were having events, were having demos, were doing all these different things. So it was really fun to see it all and hang out with it all. On Friday or Saturday afternoon, I watched the dual slalom, the pro dual slalom, which is a downhill mountain bike race where the tracks, it's a double course, are matched and they're right next to each other. So the two riders go out at the same time and ride right next to each other and go down the hill and, you know, see who comes across first. It was fun. It was a wild time as well. People were cheering and yelling and just getting really wild in some cases. I took some pictures and just hung out with some of the Bike Builders guys and just up high on the hill. So we got a good view of the whole course. We were at a pretty gnarly turn. And then we could clearly see kind of the patch where like every person crashed, it seemed. So it was a perfect spot, really. It wasn't too crowded where we were. And it was fun to just hang out on the hill there. And then on Friday night, I was talking with my dad on the phone, and he was checking Instagram, and he follows this handmade bike workshop up in Portland called Vanilla Workshop. And he was like, hey, they're having a vegan cookout at their vans in the campsite. You should go. Like, I sent it to you on Instagram. And I was like, okay, I'll check where it is. You know, but there's campsites all over the Sea Otter area. So I was kind of expecting it to be super far away, and I didn't want to walk that far. But I look on Instagram, and it's like Campsite I. And I'm like, what? I? CP Cycling's in I. So I'm like, sweet. And so I start walking down the aisles of the campsite we're in, and I'm like, no, no, no. And on Instagram, it was like, oh, you'll see our van, our logo on our van. And I was like, okay, I didn't see anything. Get all the way down to the end of the campsite, turn around. I'm like, well, I guess they're not here. I walk back, and I just missed the logo because it was on the other side of the van. But they're literally camped right across from Cal Poly Cycling, where I was camped. So it was perfect for me to walk over and get some awesome vegan hot dogs and hang out with the Vanilla Workshop Speedwagon guys, which is the same company, make some beautiful handmade bikes in Portland. And they were really cool. I hung out with them for quite a while. Hung out with them tomorrow, or the next day, I mean, on Saturday at the expo. And just ate some vegan food and chatted for a long time with them and invited some of the CP Cycling people over to come and get some of the food. Like I said, I went up with Cal Poly Cycling and I went up with Bike Builders, and I hung out with both of them, both of those groups, a lot during the weekend. And so I expected it to get pretty crazy. You know, it's a bunch of college kids and people were getting drunk and there were beer cans everywhere and bottles everywhere and all that, obviously, which I'm sure you're not surprised by. And they were like yelling and going crazy and, you know, doing stuff. I heard rumors that some jumps were being built, but the cops were really like strict about no jumps being built in the campsites, no bike jumps. So I didn't really see any of that happening. I heard stories from other years where, you know, crazy jumps are built, but, you know, who knows how true those are or how accurate they are to the telling of the story. All these different things, but nothing ever really crazy, I would say, happened. We kind of just hung out by the fire and ate food and just kind of relaxed, I guess you can say, in a lot of senses. So long story short, the Born to Run ultramarathons are still crazier. That is definitely still the craziest event I've been to, and I've talked about that a ton over the past year since I went for the first time last May, and I'm super excited to go again this year at the end of May. So yeah, that event is a whole nother level. I heard, like I had said, I heard rumors about past sea otters, how crazy it gets. I heard, you know, talk about how crazy this sea otter would get in the lead up to it, how crazy sea otter is. And it was crazy, but it wasn't anything I hadn't seen before, that's for sure. On Highway 1, on Sunday, I mean, I drove down Highway 1, kind of flipped that, whoops, which is, you know, the Pacific Coast Highway. Classic, beautiful California destination for a lot of people. Famous location, famous drive. So I drove it down from Monterey all the way down to San Luis Obispo, which is a stunning section. And I ran in Pfeiffer Burn State Park in Big Sur, which was a great run. I did that last time I drove down Highway 1 from Santa Cruz, which is in October. So it's good to return there and just hang out in that beautiful state park again. Under some redwoods by Big Creek, and run up, you know, steep trail and run back down and have some lunch. I mean, can't really get better than that. So these past two weekends I've been gone. I've been camping, like I said, and so my weekdays have been busy, and they'll be busy this week as well. And I've kind of had to catch up on a lot of stuff. Not necessarily, maybe not catch up, but I've had to take care of a lot of stuff during the weekdays. And so there were many times last week where I was like, you know, on the verge of getting overwhelmed. I didn't even like call my mom or my dad or talk to really anybody, like any friends or anything, about like my time at Pinnacles last weekend and like share the stories up until maybe like Thursday or Wednesday night last week, because I was so busy. My whole day was filled with stuff that I needed to accomplish last week. And it's looking like it'll be pretty much the same thing this week. So it took a lot out of me during the weekdays, and I'm sure it will this week as well, to accomplish what I needed to accomplish between and leading up to, you know, being away these past two weekends. And so I really needed to make sure to manage what I was working on and how I was approaching what I was working on. It was something that I needed to keep in the forefront of my thought patterns in my mind as I was, you know, moving through the weeks, and then I'm going to need to do the same as I'm moving through this week. And one of the key ways that I've been doing that is lists. And I've talked about lists before on the podcast, but that's really, you know, the stories of Pinnacles and of Sea Otter. I just want to kind of use them as a illustrative tool to reinforce the importance of, in my mind, of to-do lists, of itemizing your life, of making sure you have what you need to accomplish in front of your face. You can see it, and then you can physically check it off, whether that's, you know, a thumb press on a little screen on your phone to check it off, or whether it's a pen you flourish and you give a big check mark on something you accomplished on a piece of paper, whatever it may be. I really do recommend making a to-do list with what you need to accomplish, itemizing what's, you know, important and what's least important, and, you know, beginning to crack away at that list. I have each week, I start the week on Monday or on Sunday evenings with going through my classes and their syllabi, and figuring out what homework I will need to do. And I always do the homework for the next week, the week before. So I itemize all the homework, list it all out on Google Notes, and then I have it all there right in front of me that I can go through each class, check off the reading and the studying and the projects that I need to accomplish during the week, and I work my way through checking those off. And then obviously the podcast and other things I need to take care of outside of school also go on a list typically. And they're all by way of making sure that I have everything that I need to do right in front of my face. And that's, like I said, how I was able to, you know, because here in college, because, you know, it's me and it's learning independence and all the various other things you hear about college, it's up to me to make sure that I'm being responsible about what I need to accomplish. There's no parent over my shoulder telling me what to do or what not to do or anything like that. It's me and me alone. And that's what, you know, part of what the benefit of college is, or just learning independence in general is because you can build this familiarity with being responsible if you put in the work to do so. And that's what I've been trying to put in the work to do, is to be as responsible as possible and accomplish what I need to accomplish in a timely manner. And sometimes when I'm not, you know, as on top of what I'm trying to or attempting to accomplish that day or that week, as I have been many times during my experience here in college over the past, you know, almost 2 years now, I do tend to fall into that overwhelmed state, into that stressed state. It's a very easy jump for me to make, to become overwhelmed when I have seemingly too many things on my plate at one time that I need to get done by the end of the week or something, by Thursday or something. And I felt that kind of creeping in this morning. I wanted to figure out what I was going to be talking about today on the podcast. This Monday morning, figuring out what I was going to be talking about today on the podcast. I just kind of got dropped that I had the kind of in my head what this certain project was for school wrong. That it was actually, the project was different than I thought it was, and it was going to require a lot more work than I expected. And I also had all the normal, like, you know, homework and things I needed to accomplish for school that I still hadn't listed out yet. Like I said, I do typically, and I thought I had more than I expected, or just in my head it felt like a lot. And all that was kind of coming together in light of the fact that I just spent the last 3 days, you know, up in Monterey and hanging out, not accomplishing these things. And so it kind of all almost came to a head where I was on the verge of becoming overwhelmed and just, you know, having that whole, my whole day almost stressed. Because for me, it almost turns out like if I jump into that state of being overwhelmed, then I'm there for quite a while and it takes a while to work back out of it. But I've been really trying to put in the work to be mindful of when I'm approaching that feeling, when I'm in that feeling, and then when I'm approaching that state of being overwhelmed and stressed, and taking a breath and taking a step back. So I told myself, you know what, Jared, just you these things need to get done. There's no question about that. You'll figure it out. You always do. You'll figure it out. Don't stress about it right now. Do what you need to do right now. Do your laundry. Make your, you know, food. Do that. Listen to your podcast. Come back to your apartment. List out all the things that need to get done, and you'll figure out a plan. You'll make it happen. And that's what I did. I went to go do my laundry. I listened to the podcast. I was listening to some comedic ones, so it was funny. Got back to my room, sat down, went through all the homework that I needed to accomplish. Turns out it was way less than I thought it was going to be. And seeing it on my phone all listed out, it was like, it didn't feel as much as I felt it was. And this project that I had like the misconception of, that it was actually going to be more work than I thought, it relies on covering a timely news piece about something here on campus or something in the local area. And I had no idea that was really what was stressing me out the most, is I had no idea what I was going to be working, you know, what I was going to be covering with this project. I was like, I have no news things that I know about that's going on campus. I have absolutely no idea what to cover. I don't want to go out into the local area of SLO. I mean, that's a whole other level of work. I just want to stay on campus, but I don't know what's going on campus. And anything that I can think of is just redundant, things that have already been covered. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do. And again, that in that moment with everything else, that's kind of when I was stepping into that overwhelmed territory. But I took a breath. I said, you know what, Jared? Things always come to you. Just do your thing, do your laundry, do what you were doing, work on the things, take it step by step, do what you have to do, something will come up, something will come to you, you'll think of an idea, you pitch it to the teacher, she'll say yes to whatever idea it is, you always think of some good ones, then you work on the project and you'll turn it in next week, you'll be okay, just figure it out. And I was like, okay, you know what, you're right, in my own head. It's kind of just that those conversations that you have with yourself, rationalizing, you know, between stress or patience and dedication and consistency. And that's what I was trying to stay in the mode of patience and dedication and consistency. So I was like, okay, just breathe. And then actually, as I was going to the laundry room to go wash my clothes, I live on campus. There was a flyer up on the wall for this event that's going on actually tonight on campus. And I was like, that is the perfect event to cover. Took a picture of the flyer, already formulating kind of how I'm going to approach covering this news event, and I think that's what I'm going to be going with. And if I hadn't taken that step back and said to myself, you know what, Jared, you'll figure it out. You always do. Just breathe. I would have been stressed, probably, you know, out of my mind in a lot of senses, probably just gone in the laundry room, all in my own head, just thinking, not being present, missed the flyer, and been stressed even more because I probably would have never even found the event that I'll go and cover tonight. But I was only able to take that step back because I took a breath, because I had everything laid out in front of me of what I needed to accomplish on that list. I was able to see what needs to be done, what doesn't need to be done, what I had the misconceptions of, what I had proper conceptions of, and put it all together in my head so that I had this to-do list, that I had it in my head, that I had it all right, and that I could get onto the path of accomplishing what I needed to accomplish. And that's really kind of what I wanted to illustrate today, is the power of to-do lists, the power of physically visualizing what needs to be done so that you can get checking those items off piece by piece and working through them. It really is a powerful tool to manage your day, manage your time, manage your mental well-being, your mindset, your mental health, so that you don't step into that overwhelmed territory, into that stress territory, and that you can just stay present, learn to take those breaths away from becoming overwhelmed, and stay on that path of focus and dedication and presence. So if you're interested in learning more, seeing more about what Touching the Trail is up to, go on over to touchingthetrail.com, read the writings, read the resources, sign up for the Touching the Trail Weekly newsletter that I send out every weekend. If you sign up for the first time, you'll get a free downloadable vegan ebook, Touching the Trail Recipes. And every week you'll get a book recommendation, you'll get a spiritual quote breakdown, and a weekly challenge to help better yourself. If you ever have any questions or comments, or if you just want to chat, feel free to reach out to me via the contact page on the website. And you can always follow us on social media at Touching the Trail on Instagram, at Touch the Trail on Twitter, and the Touching the Trail page on Facebook. If you haven't done so already, please make sure to subscribe to the show and share it out with your friends and your family and your coworkers and everybody else who wants to better themselves. And if you're loving the show every week, please leave a review. Let me know that you're out there and that you're listening and that you're enjoying what I do. If you want to help support the show, you can go to touchingthetrail.com/donate to donate to the show. And as I've said many times before, you can do however much you want. But this show is built and based in the Buddhist concept of dana, generosity, of giving. And so I cannot continue to build and grow and improve this community, this tribe, without your help. You can also go to targetreleaserecovery.com to pick up your very own Basecamp and Peak. Now, these are functional, affordable, unique, and handmade handheld deep tissue massage tools. And all those links are in the show notes. Now, going forward this week, I just want you all to remember the power of making lists, the power of to-do lists, of visualizing what you need to accomplish right in front of your eyes, right in front of your head, kind of outsourcing that stress so that it's all there. You can just start checking those things off and working through what you need to get done so that you don't step into that overwhelmed territory, so that you can remember to take a breath and take a step back. And always remember to go far, go further. And I'll see you all next week on the Touching the Trail podcast. The Touching the Trail podcast.